Today on the Illini Choir Podcast, he's back. Jay Layman, All-American linebacker, back on the Illini Choir Podcast, talking all things Illinois football. His first appearance of the 2026 season, Jay gives his season preview. What he's excited about with Illinois football, what gives him confidence heading into the 2026 season, but also what concerns him with all the change happening with this roster and this coaching staff. We also break down some key players. We talk about the schedule, and we talk about the program 5 years into the Brett Bielema era. He is the goods. He's the one, the only, Jay Layman, joining us next on the Illini Choir Podcast. All right, it's that time. It's Jay Layman season here on the Illini Inquirer Podcast. The All-American linebacker joins us for another season of Illinois football. And Jay, we're recording this on Tuesday, August 18th. We're 2 weeks away from Illinois opening the season, but it's good to see you, buddy. How are you?
Doing well. It goes fast, except for the players in camp. It goes so slow. And I would assume probably mid this week, they'll have a scrimmage or so, and then after that, kind of point their direction toward game week prep and UAB. And I can tell you, as from a player's perspective, that is like the time you've been waiting for. I mean, spring ball's a grind, summer can be a grind. Certainly the first 2 weeks of fall camp is a grind. And I think the coaches are looking forward to it as well.
Yeah, you have the scrimmage on Wednesday. It'll be their second scrimmage of two scrimmages that they have in training camp, Jay. That third week, though, that's got to be the dog days.
It is the dog days. It's when, you know, you're not on the injured list, but you have two or three injuries that you haven't told anybody about, or that you're just getting treatment on the side, and you're banged up. You've been hitting the same people. You've been seeing the same offense for quite some time, and the same competition. For me, it was always going against, you know, Martin O'Donnell and Xavier Fulton, always just trying to hit them year in and year out, and Russ Weil at fullback. But you get used to it, and you're just like, okay, I'm done with this. Let's go play the scout team and then play a real team.
Yeah. Well, Jay, I told you we're going to do some things that give you confidence about this year's team, some things that concern you, and then we'll talk about some players that you're really interested in watching. But before we get there, I think it's always worth kind of a reset of where we're at. 5 years into the Brett Bielema era, he has won – a lot of games here at Illinois. In the last 4 years especially, he's won 32 games, 37 over 5 years here, coming off back-to-back nine-win seasons. So 5 years into Brett Bielema's tenure, Jay, what do you think he's accomplished here?
Well, I also want to talk about this Big Ten wins. I saw a stat that he's won 23 Big Ten games, and I think we won 24 from 2009 to when he arrived here, you know, through 2020. So I think we're being highly competitive in the conference, first and foremost. And, you know, Josh Whitman, when he hired Brett Bielema, said we were looking for a certain pedigree. We studied programs that had historically not had the success of football programs, that being K-State, Iowa before Hayden Fry, K-State before Bill Snyder, and Wisconsin before Barry Alvarez. We're not consistent winners. And since, you know, they had people that came from the Hayden Fry tree, Barry Alvarez and Snyder, they have been successful. And it just so happened that Brett Bielema checked a lot of boxes for that, as we know. He had either coached under, or he coached under all three of those guys, played for Hayden Fry, obviously, and had won Big Ten championships at Wisconsin, went to Arkansas. And what's so rare is we had a Big Ten championship coach with all of those pedigrees just available, just, you know, a position coach for the New York Giants at that time, I believe, available for a head coaching position. And you know, a big shout out to Josh for having the foresight to say, hey, this is the guy we need to kind of build a program. Remember, this is pre-NIL. This is coming off of COVID. There's a lot of different things that have changed, a lot of water under the bridge since then. But one thing I'll give Brett a big, I want to give him a lot of credit for is people may think that he's old school in the way that he does things. He's been really able to change what he does offensively, what he does defensively, but also how he builds a roster in this day and age where maybe you don't have the resources that other teams may have in the conference. How do we get the best bang for the buck, best ROI? What is our philosophy about paying high school players or not paying high school players? Who is going to fit to our system and that we can develop in our system. It's easy to put a blue chip somewhere and they can play anywhere because they're good athletes. But can I take a guy who was underutilized, under recruited, and put him into our system in a way that we can mold him and fit him so he can fit a role and help us win ball games on Saturdays? I think he's done a tremendous job with that. And he's been able to have continuity for the most part in the staff. Barry Lundy being the biggest, Aaron Henry for 3 or 4 years, whether you agreed or disagreed with Aaron Henry and how he called defenses, it was continuity for the football team. And there's a shift on the defense this year. So all of those to say, I think Brett has done a tremendous job at actually building a sustainable program. And with that, you have stuff that happens that builds momentum. Even Devin Witherspoon this week getting a huge contract for a defensive back. That's a huge, huge bolster for this program, what we can do to develop football players. And, you know, the highest paid defensive back I saw went to the University of Illinois. That's pretty astounding to see. And so I think all good things on the horizon. But at the same time, and I know fans get tired of hearing this, you're only as good as your last season. Yeah. And so we are going to find out real soon, can Brett, with all of the COVID players gone, all the players he inherited gone, and largely that a lot of that had happened last year, but he hasn't had the kind of turnover he's had this year probably since 2023, in which they had a lot of turnover. And so it's going to be a challenge for the staff of this program.
You led me perfectly into this. I do want to comment. The adaptability kind of reminds me a little bit of Brad Underwood. Now, Brad has a little bit more resources for his sport compared to Brett for his sport when it comes to roster building. But just his ability to adapt, change things, I think has been also there with Brad Underwood. But you mentioned it. The last time they've gone through this much change was 2023, which I think was really the most disappointing year of Brett Bielema's tenure. Even year one, like, I don't think anybody expected bowl game. Brett had him on the precipice of one, so to miss it was disappointing. But 23 was the most disappointing year, and you changed defense coordinators. You changed a lot of your talent. What do you think Bielema learned from that, and what do you think the challenge of it is 5 years into this, now having this much change?
Well, I think he needed a game-experienced quarterback. I think that's why Kaitenhauser was so critical to get. Luke Altmaier had minor game experience. He was not a two-year starter at a Group of Five program. He was a four-star recruit who had filled in the Sugar Bowl and played some. But really, you had to break in Luke Altmaier that season. There were some rough spots, and Luke would tell you the same. Lack confidence and whatnot, and Penn State game was probably the biggest one when he had all those turnovers. So I think first and foremost, he knew that although we really like Michael Clayton, we like Carson Boyd, we think that we, for this transitionary year, we probably need a guy with game experience to give us a chance to hit the goals that we want. And then he also said, hey, I'm not sure that the personnel nor the scheme that we have right now are what we need defensively to help us during this transition. And with everybody moving on, it might be a good time to transition because there have been a lot of copycats in the league. I know Brett's big about making people prepare for you. And he's basically said, hey, we're going to make people have a new prep every week with this defense because we're going to be so dynamic and trying to create pressure and movement. And we believe that we can recruit to those different skill sets that will be good. Now, I think a big difference is on that 2023 team, you had a very inexperienced secondary that Matthew Bailey and Xavier Scott were part of as young players. And now they're very experienced. And you had Juice Clark in there as well. And obviously some other pieces with Bailey and Xavier Scott. So I think the secondary, but those are the things that I think remind me of it. But I think Brett has also understood too how important these first non-con games are. I think we first saw red flags in that Kansas game where you're like, holy cow, Kansas is throwing the ball all over the place. So I think, not to say UAB won't be a challenge, in the first game you always learn a lot, but that Duke game will be a challenge. And we'll see a lot of where this team's at before they have to open up conference play with Ohio State.
Testosterone naturally starts dipping for a lot of guys as early as their 30s, even ones who are already fit and active. It's not really about how hard you're training. It's about whether your hormones are keeping up with it. Lower T can mean flatter energy, slower recovery, and a harder time building the muscle you're actually working so hard for. If that sounds like you, you should check out Mars Men. It's a natural supplement designed to support healthy testosterone levels, which can help your body burn fat more efficiently and build lean muscle. basically helping things run the way they did years ago. No weird stimulants, no synthetic hormones, just real ingredients. It's made in the USA, third-party tested, and you actually find it at GNC nationwide now. When you take it, your energy will feel way more consistent. Lifts feel stronger, recovery is better, and honestly, there's zero risk in trying. They back it with a 90-day money-back guarantee, and over 91% of users report higher energy levels. Check the reviews on the site. Thousands of guys are seeing real results. For a limited time, our listeners at Illini Inquirer get 50% off for life, free shipping, and three free gifts if you go to mengotomars.com. That's mengotomars.com for 50% off and three free gifts at checkout. And when they ask where you heard about them, tell them Illini Inquirer sent you. The over-under for this team is 7.5, which I think is a nod to both the schedule, which we'll dive into here, Jay, which is manageable, but also the respect Bielema has and the respect Bielema has built in this program. So entering this year, I want you to take us where you want to go. What gives you confidence in Brett Bielema's Illinois team entering the 2026 season?
First and foremost, and maybe this is a cheat answer, it's Brett Bielema. I think he gives me confidence. I think if he's at the ship and he's making decisions, I think he's earned the right for us to trust that he probably knows best for this football team. And I think that Barry Lunney is a guy too. Just to have a fifth-year offensive coordinator is relatively unheard of in Power Four football. And so I think it always starts with the coaching staff. So I feel confident in that. Here's where I do feel confident. I actually feel really confident in Caden Hauser. I think you look at his body of work, the snippets you get in press conference, that seems to be low on their concerns of, is this, can this guy play quarterback? It seems to be
there doesn't seem to be a question, Jay, that like they're like, we don't worry about a quarterback. He's gonna be fine. We've got some things we can tune up, but yeah, he'll be fine.
Yeah, you know, I listened to Barry Lunney's presser yesterday that you guys posted, and Caden Hauser wasn't on the list of concerns. It was more like, yeah, we got to get guys to gel. We've had some injuries where maybe we always want to be better than we are. And I did notice a little concern I heard from Lunney. I'm like, okay, well, we had some injuries. We got to kind of come together. But it wasn't about Caden Hauser, right? And Lunney's usually a speak softly, carry a big stick guy. He's not going to come out and say, yeah, we look fantastic. We're really, you know, hang half a hundred on him. So, but in reading that, in listening to him, it wasn't Caden Hauser. I think that gives me confidence. Number two is the secondary. I think you have an ability to really limit big plays and play some unique coverages with the talent we have in the secondary. So I think that gives me confidence. And then lastly, I think we've got two really good running backs and probably some guys we haven't heard much of that I think are going to be relied on more than we think. I think we could have a quicker RPO passing attack with Caden Hauser with his quicker release. But I also think Brett and Barry are not going to go away from running the football. And I think we got pretty two good backs when they're healthy. I was really impressed by Aiden Loffrey when he was healthy last year. Whenever he's been healthy, whether it be the Northwestern game a couple of years ago or whatnot, I've been so impressed. And Khalil, we know what he can do. And I think one more year of maturing. So I think those are what give me confidence and also the schedule. You lucked out a little bit in that you don't draw Indiana and you don't draw some of the other powers. At the same time, who knows who's going to be good this year to year, right? I give the credit to Don Harden. I don't know if Don Harden, former volleyball coach for Illinois, actually said this. Somebody told me he said this, but you know, if you're looking for the patsy on your schedule and you can't find the patsy, you must be the patsy. And there was an era where we were like that. We were trying to count, is there any way to get to six wins? Well, these three wins we got and whatnot. And I think it's really hard to do now with the turnover teams. And you don't get to watch practice. I literally remember Lauren Tate watching practices until basketball season started. Then he would kind of check out. But, you know, you have reporters there and watching the whole practice. I know you guys missed that. And I missed that, too, because it's really hard to understand what teams have.
Well, Jay, I wanted to ask you about each of those things. So I want to follow up on each of the schedule, by the way. Illinois is the number one and number two teams in the preseason poll on their schedule. Ohio State to start Big Ten play, rough start, and then you have number two Oregon coming to town. I think all of us know they're probably going to be in the top 10 no matter where they are in the polls. Number 22, Iowa, late in the season, always going to be difficult against Kirk Ferentz's team. But the other six teams are all projected to finish in the bottom eight. And while, again, yes, we don't know who's going to be good, I don't see any of those teams being like top six. Like, sure. Maybe sure, make no. the case for Nebraska breaking out with, but man, that's a huge jump for them. So you're right. Like, there's opportunity there, but a lot of those games are toss-ups probably on the schedule.
Here's the thing. On paper, it looked like we should have beaten Wisconsin. But the moment they turned that game on in the first quarter, you knew something was off. It looked like Wisconsin looked like they were playing harder and frankly wanted it more from a defensive line and running the ball perspective. That's going to happen in some games. I think Michigan State's a total wild card. They've got a bunch of new players, a new coach, and kind of got an edge to them. UCLA. I think Northwestern could be a wild card with Chip Kelly at offense, right? I mean, you mentioned the Iowa Hawkeyes. They tend to get better as the year goes on. We'll play them in November. Last time we played them in November, I'm not sure if that was a 63-0 game or not, but it was one of those games in November. So there's a lot of different things out there. You're like, yeah, you could see them going either way. Oregon and Ohio State, I think all of us want to see us more competitive in those games than we have been the last 2 years.
For sure. Hauser, with his skill set, it's different than Luke's. How do you expect Barry, with the weapons he has, I'm sure we'll get into the offensive line here, but how do you expect the offense to look different or be different, if at all?
Yeah, so with Hauser, I've only seen snippets of him play at East Carolina, so we don't know. It sounds like his release is better. It sounds like he's bigger. It's not that he can't run, but he did have in the red zone in short yardage. He's a powerful runner. You'd be hard pressed to find a guy as crafty as Luke Altmyer when it came to running. He was very, very crafty. I think whenever you have a quick release, I think it opens up the quick game a little bit more. It's something I don't think Illinois utilized that much. And part of that is what led to Luke being sacked a lot. They had some long formulating plays and whatnot. I think you're going to see some quick game to Colin Dixon. I think Hudson Clement has shown that he is when he's healthy in the quick game. And then the X factor, Jayshon Platt. I mean, we've seen what he can do in some clips. But Platt is the guy that's healthy, right? The other guy that got hurt was
Alex Perry.
Yeah, Alex Perry got banged up, which is a shame because he is a big body, a real big body that I know they wanted to get in the portal that they thought could do some different things like Justin Bowick maybe did for them. And so, but I think there's going to be one or two receivers too that surprise us that maybe it's a Brayden Trimble, maybe it's Sitchy, whatever it may be. I think we're going to see quick game more. Okay, I really do. And I also think that we're going to see a little bit more creativity at the tailback position because I believe that the versatility of Khalil and Aiden really mix it up more so than maybe what Caden could do. And so I'm looking for some different run schemes because I believe they have some grinders up front. They have the ability to pull up front. And so I could see a combination of zone scheme and gap scheme and mixing those together. Gap scheme, for those that don't know, is just people pulling and down blocking, because I think you have some graders where times we've been more zone. I think we have the ability to move people off the ball. So I think that could look different. And what that does, it could set up some of the deep play action that we have with Luke Altmyer as well off of that. And that's how it looks different with Caden Hauser. I know I talked a lot there.
Yeah. No, and I'm really interested because this offensive line has question marks. I'm sure we'll get into, Jay, but they are bigger, right? There's a bigger offensive line up front. So I'm wondering how that impacts the running backs. But you brought them up, Khalil Valentine and Aiden Loffrey. If you just told me Aiden Loffrey stayed healthy for 12 games and had 150 carries, I think that guy could be an all-Big Ten contention.
He's more explosive than you think, and he's a little bit stronger than you think if you watch him when he's healthy. I just think he's never had a year where he's 100% healthy. Even going back to his last year of high school, I think that he had a hamstring issue, and he's got elite speed when he's out in the open. And I'm curious how they run the ball behind this offensive line because – one, I think both of those guys have decent ball skills. I think Caden Fagan obviously had good ball skills. They moved him to tight end. But I think those guys have shown they can catch the ball in the backfield. They can do some different things. But you have a bigger offensive line. In general, zone teams oftentimes will play smaller guys. Those old West Virginia teams of Rich Rod back in the day, Glenn Mason of Minnesota, they would have smaller offensive linemen that were quicker, that were more positional blockers. And I think we've had some of those in the past. This reminds me much more of a Mauler offensive line. Michael Modelak and Henderson are much more Mauler and, you know, oriented. Renfro seems like that guy that can be physical at the point of attack. Our tackles are a little bit lengthier, so I wouldn't say they were necessarily Maulers, but they obviously have to be good in pass coverage and pass protection. But when I think about Loughery and I think about Khalil in this backfield, I want to see them not only be able to hit the hole hard, but also in a variety of ways. You know, whether that's the outside, the inside, poles, zones, whatever, draw plays. We've seen Loughery be successful in the draw play. I'm excited about those guys, but keeping them healthy has got to be a priority.
What do you think is Khalil Valentine's next step?
Well, you know, Khalil from the jump has always been super explosive. He hasn't been the most patient guy.
Yeah.
I think his patience and I think his vision have to be better than what they've been. I remember Chase Brown early on, you could see the talent, you could see the speed, but a lot of times he'd run into the back of his lineman. He was going so much faster than everybody else. When Chase really understood angles, patience, timing, he started to really break some big runs. I think that's where Khalil's at as well. You know, ball security hasn't been that big of an issue, although he's had some timely fumbles, one against USC. For the most part, you don't feel like our guys have been fumble-itis guys.
Yeah.
And so I like that, but I think it's patience and timing for Khalil. I think for Aiden, it's really about being healthy.
All right, the last one before we get to your concerns. You mentioned the secondary. I mean, that is the most talented group probably on this entire team. I think maybe your three best NFL prospects heading into the season are on in your secondary. So how do you think Bobby Houck's defense, how do you think it kind of weaponizes, whether it's Xavier Scott, Matthew Bailey, Juice Clark?
Yeah, you know, usually you hear this in regards to offensive coordinators, but they often will say, hey, I think in the terms of players and not plays. And that would be, hey, it's not so much the play we run. It's more, do I get the ball to Colin Dixon?
Yeah.
Does Pat Bryant get a touch? And so I think when it comes to defense is how can you put your players in a chance to succeed? When I think about Juice Clark, I think about a physical cover corner. And so I think he's a guy that can take away half the field if there's a single receiver over there, which lets your inexperienced players have a little bit more help. That's kind of what we did with Vontae. It's what Devin Witherspoon has done and will continue to do. When I think about Xavier Scott, I think he has a rare ability to cover the slot in the nickel position, play safety or play corner, and also roll into a linebacker position if you asked him to do that on certain downs. So I think a ton of versatility for him. And when it comes to Matthew Bailey, we know that he's comfortable playing in the box. He may be your best overall tackler as far as physicality and whatnot. And so all three of those guys bring a different aspect when I watch them play, Juice being your best cover guy, Xavier being your most Swiss Army knife, as he can do the most things, and Bailey probably being the best tackler. And so how do I put those guys in position? If I have an unblocked player, I probably want that to be Matthew Bailey. If I've got a receiver into the boundary, which is a shorter throw for the quarterback, I probably want my most twitchy, long guy out there, which would probably be Juice Clark. And if I have a slot receiver that's just an absolute bear and killing me on third down, I want to get Xavier Scott on him. So it's about matchups and putting your players in the position that actually helps them succeed.
I think the most famous person that came out of the Rocky Long defenses was probably Brian Urlacher in that safety, sure, that middle safety spot, which is kind of what the Chief, I think, is going to be, Jay. We don't get to see practice. They're holding things back. But what do you think of Bailey potentially in that type of role?
You know, I haven't seen them line up and whatnot, yeah, but just to give you a picture of what that middle safety is, a lot of times it looks like there's a 3-3, and it looks like that safety is there 2 or 3 yards back,
yeah,
like a 7 or 8 yard depth. And one, it's too deep for offensive linemen to get to you, and so it's unblockable. You're in the middle of the field, so you can't run away from this person, and you're a factor on run and pass. Here's the problem with that. If that guy's not a run first player and physical, you really only have a 6-man box. Mm-hmm. You have a 7-man box. That's tough to account for that 7th man if he's aggressive and coming downhill. And that's really the role that I see him playing. And a lot of guys have gone to this. I got to tell you, for me, watching a 3-3, I get in a little bit of a panic mode because there seems – a 3-3-5, there seems to be too many linemen uncovered a lot of times. And I guess I have nightmares of uncovered linemen coming up to me as a linebacker.
Yeah.
And swallowing me up. Not saying that's going to happen, and there's going to be more than three people in the line at some times, and they'll move different things. But I will say it's certainly a different look than we had a lot of times 5 down linemen or 3 down linemen and 2 outside linebackers on the ball, which you have almost everybody covered up at least half a man, and so some of those guys can run free. So it's a little bit different. Now, if you're moving more, though, and stunting more, then that can create confusion for the offensive line, and you can, you know, sometimes create mismatches, and therefore the lineman can't get to you or reach up to you. So that's what you have to do.
Yeah.
But if you just do a still shot of it, it can sometimes be like, you know, is there enough people there to stop,
yeah,
you know, the run? Are we just going to get run on all day? And so I go into a little panic that way. That's just old school me. Like I have bad nightmares of linemen just coming up free on me and grabbing me and never letting me go.
It's so, perfect transition, Jay, to what concerns you, because I think a lot of people with this defense, which is not run a lot at this level, and Illinois' personnel up front, I think most of the concerns start about what this defensive front can do in the Big Ten.
Yeah, I think that's my biggest concern is, I've been on football teams, and I've seen enough Illinois football teams where we just simply can't stop the run. And if you can't stop the run, I mean, you think the Washington game was bad last year, and it was. The defense was not good. You think Ohio State wasn't great, and it was. But they weren't just able to necessarily run the ball at will.
Right.
And we largely haven't seen that in the Bielema era where people have just – run the ball at will. We've had a lot of those over the last 20 years, and you know, I've been part of a game against Northwestern in 2003, 2004. I don't think they passed the ball in the second half. For that's like high school junior football stuff, right? So that's how far we've come. Again, I have a little PTSD in regards to, you know, I want to be able to stop the run. I think it always starts with stopping the run, because if you can stop the run, you can control the clock. And you can control the down and distance and put them in unfavorable circumstances where you know that it's a pass and you can really bring your pressures. A lot of pressures are run pressures. A lot of pressures are pass rush pressures. And you don't want to get caught in the other one when they're doing the opposite. And so I think getting ahead in the count, not in the count rather, that's baseball, getting ahead on the sticks.
Makes sense.
Would help us. In understanding that and creating those negative plays. And this is really going to feed off of negative plays, where it really was a bend but don't break defense for Aaron Henry. I know people don't like to say that term, but that's really what the reality was.
And when you don't get turnovers, there's too much breaking, right?
There was too much breaking. We didn't get turnovers. Where here, it's we're trying to get one negative play, one offensive penalty, one turnover that shifts the drive or series in our favor, and we capitalize on it. That's how I would say. We're trying to make one of those plays, a negative play that shifts it in our favor, and we feel really good. If we can make one of those plays, a holding penalty, a tackle for loss for 3 yards, a sack, a, you know, interception, obviously, more often than not over a game, we'll have the advantage. That's how I would classify it.
Yeah, it's a great way of putting it. And the other part of this thing is, like, the personnel is a question mark, right? Because, like, you're counting on Joe Barna and Pat Farrell to take huge leaps. You're counting on some underrated transfers like Daryl Prater and, you know, Carter Janke to be good for you. And at linebacker, Jay, you got Daniel Brown and Mason Moragan playing this new Mike linebacker, which could be your fourth D lineman, could be playing nose tackle one play, could be off the ball. And guys like James Crouch and Ish Conte that are playing big roles. So there's just, you know, there's question marks about the scheme, but put the personnel on top of it, there's question marks there too.
It's just largely inexperienced too. Yeah. I mean, I like Pat Farrell. I think he played well at times at Joe Barna, but if those are your two most experienced guys playing on the field, at least for Illinois time, that's not a lot of experience in your front six. Right. It just is what it is. I think the coaches have their work cut out for them in that regard. Give me an update on Grant Bierman. What's the injury update?
He's been injured. He's supposed to be back for the season. But, yeah, he's been injured basically the entire year. So I don't think this is the breakout year for Grant Bierman. No, I do think he'll play.
He was injured in spring with an ankle.
And then he's had something. I don't know what it is, this training camp, that he's been limited throughout it.
Sure. So I'm concerned. I here's the problem. I haven't seen enough of these guys to actually tell you what I think about
them. Hey, me too. I'm the same way.
And so I think Barna's been strong at the point of attack. He's been in the shadow of Gabe Akis for 2 years. I think Pat Farrell in a rotational role has done well, but he certainly wasn't an every down guy. So I don't really know what to say other than, hey, we don't have a lot of experience up front, and I think that's the biggest thing is if an offense, we got weapons on offense and a quarterback and a coordinator, but if we can't get off the field, you're going to start minimizing possessions for the offense. And I think that's the scary part.
All right. Offensively, Jay, what are your concerns on that side of the ball?
Well, I think you have to start with the offensive line. They just haven't played a lot together. I think they have a chance, especially the guard, center, guard, have a chance to be really physical? Yes. That's not saying Josh Geske wasn't physical. I think Crouch was more of a positional blocker, and moved really well, and was a good leader for this team. I don't think you would call him a road grader by any means. Not a lot of centers are, so I certainly don't want to put that. But how much movement do we get in the point of attack, and do we have more under center sneaks and different things and tush pushes and everything else? So I think the offensive line just not playing a ton together. I'm reading between the lines here. It sounds like they felt like they had a lot of depth at receiver coming in, and injuries have really, really trimmed that down.
Yeah, I think they feel great about their starters in Braden Trimble. So that'd be Colin Dixon, Hudson Clement. Clement's been nicked up throughout training camp. It sounds like he'll be full go here soon. And then Jayshon Platt, they rave about, and they think Trimble's going to play a role, but again, hasn't played. But yeah, after that, Jay, you're talking about Ty Robinson from Ball State, who's been injured his whole career, and freshman, really. I mean, you've added Josh Lorick out of Incarnate Word this week, and you've added Eddie Casper out of Illinois State, who's about 5'7". But yeah, there's depth questions there for sure.
And so usually when you have issues at wide receiver, you shift to 12 personnel, which would be one back and two tight ends and two receivers, rather than what I would call our base personnel would be 11 personnel, which would be one back and one tight end and three wide receivers. But again, we've had problems recruiting the tight ends maybe that we need to get here through the portal and whatnot. And I think it's been good to hear that Will Vala is impressed. Vala has impressed. They think he's going to be a good football player, according to Barry Lunny. That's great.
The other guy that they don't seem to be concerned about at all is Christian Abney. You know, those are big shoes to fill with Tanner Arkin, who had big shoes to fill with Tip Ryman. They seem to think Abney's plug and play, that next guy in that line.
So, and I think that's a big, position that we have to do. I would love to see us be able to get in 12 personnel and have those tight ends block defensive end as outside linebackers and be able to take them one-on-one. You know, this is an extreme example, but we see what that does for the 49ers when George Kittle's able to line up and block defensive ends and they will run the ball out of 11 personnel or 12 personnel. And I think it could be another wrinkle that you have to prepare for that we really haven't done great at. And I think that's the question of, can Caden Fagan hold up as, I'll call him the H position, and let's say Abney's the Y position. Yeah. And H is basically just a hybrid fullback kind of tight end. Can he block enough that he could be a weapon that you could split out? Now you're in 12 personnel, but it looks like 11. Or he could be an in-line blocker. I think that's the hardest thing he's going to have to get down is in-line blocking when he's in the line. What will that do? So I think those are the concerns that I have.
Yeah. All right, Jay, let's dive into some players you're most excited
to see. Another concern I have before I get into players, and I know we don't talk about it, is the special teams.
I was going to bring it up. I should have, yeah.
So
thank you. No, I was going to, and I forgot.
Number one on my list here for concerns after the front six was special teams.
Yeah, new kicker, new punter, new punt returner, new kick returner potentially.
And new special teams coach, right? I mean, didn't coach
– Yeah, Hurd, Disher's gone, but Hurd has been here. He's kind of been the specialist coach.
Disher's the head coach, but Hurd's done some good stuff, obviously. Yeah. We heard Coach talk highly about him. But new punter, new kicker, and quite frankly – a lot of your guys that were special teams guys are now going to be starters. So you have a new special teams group of guys. This has been very solid for Brett during his tenure. I think this might be the group that takes the biggest step back. I really do. You don't have much experience at punter. I'll mess this up. Malchulski. Michalski has been around. I mean, he's got a monster leg. I don't know how consistent he's been. This is not a knock on these guys. Again, I don't see him, but I just think when you're already skinny on depth, you've lost a lot of veteran players, and those guys become starters, then you have brand new special teams players, brand new punter, brand new kicker. This has been a strength for Illinois football. This has helped Illinois football. You lost your punt returner, and Hank Beatty was a darn good punt returner. I don't know if Resetich takes over. I don't know if Jayshon Platt takes over. I don't know who does that. But this is the one I'm really concerned about. About 14% of plays are special teams plays. So 86% of snaps are offense or defense. But they're usually plays that deal with points and field position. And it's something we've done a very good job at, even though we haven't had electric people at the position. I guess I would argue that Olano was really good, so I can't say he wasn't great. And Hank Beatty, one of the better ones we've ever had, right? But I'm really concerned about it. I am. I think that could flip a game or two.
Especially with how many close games Illinois has played over the years. Like, how many have flipped on special teams? I wouldn't say Indiana and Ohio State flipped on the punt team, but it certainly didn't help with those games. But then the kicking, right, and the punt returning, that was a huge way in your favor last year.
Huge. And so we're talking, you know, Brett's got a great record of one possession games. I can't remember what it is, but, you know, he was able to beat USC on a last second field goal last year and was able to beat Tennessee on a last second field goal. Okay, well, your kicker's gone now. Okay. Don't take that for granted.
Yeah.
And, you know, for the most part, I think they also lost their snapper in Lane Hansen. He's gone. So, I mean, we've got a total retool. I'm very, very concerned about special teams. Again, I don't even know who's playing on special teams. None of this is I haven't watched the game. It's not hating on the people that play special teams or the coaches that are there. It's just, I don't know.
It's a question mark. Yeah.
You asked what I'm concerned about. What keeps me up at night? That would keep me up. I'm just like, man,
that's right.
And I know. If you're putting freshmen out there as a guy that played special teams as a freshman, it's a totally different speed. It's a totally different world, and it can be crazy. And games can be won or lost on this stuff. And I'm positive that Brett's on it because Brett's on everything. But I am the most concerned, even above the front six, about the special teams.
I love that you put that out there because like that's what most people are concerned about is the front six, but special teams is a huge part of the game and a huge swing in a lot of these close games.
Well, listen, I think the front six can hold up if the offense has to drive 70 yards.
Yeah.
But what happens when we're backed up and we have a 30-yard punt and they get the ball in the 38 going in?
Yeah.
Or, you know, like last year, we take a knee on our own 35 because the snap was low because it was the backup snapper, who I think is probably the snapper this year, right? So, like – these are things that run through my head. I'm not going to stop Ohio State on a 35-yard field. It's 3 points automatic, and it's a touchdown. And it was a touchdown, okay? Yep. So kickoff, like, I still got to cover kicks. You know, it's not every kick is going to go in there. And field goals, it's not to say Alana was automatic. He was pretty darn good, though. And you got to the 35. You said, okay, we probably got 3 points. How does that affect when I go for it on fourth down? If I go on fourth down and I miss it, now they have the ball at the 35, and you know it's a shorter field. And so if you have a inexperienced defense with brand new special teams that are not winning the hidden yardage game, I'm telling you right now, it can get out of control really, really fast. Mm-hmm. Really, really fast. There's a huge difference defensively when trying to get a negative play on a 7-yard field to a 45-yard field. There's just more opportunity. There's more plays. There's more things I can do. They're not going to take as many shots or be as aggressive. Once I get in between the 40s, I'm in what they call the alumni zone. Everything's on the table. It's tough, right? Yep. And so I think that lethal combination is what has me up at night. And what's going to happen is you have that combination, short fields, them running the ball, Kaiten Hauser off the field, not what you want.
Yeah.
And so that's where games get out of control. Yeah. And so I worry about that.
All right, guys, fall is almost here. The kids are going back to school. You don't have a lot of time to cook, but you still have goals. You still want to stay in shape and eat well. Well, Factor makes it easy with fully prepared meals designed by dietitians and crafted by chefs. So you can eat well without all the shopping or cooking. Best part about Factor, always fresh, never frozen, ready in about 2 minutes, no prep, no stress. And they're made of quality, functional ingredients, including lean proteins, colorful veggies, whole food ingredients, and healthy fats. And they got a variety of options, guys. 100 rotating weekly meals, including high protein, calorie smart, Mediterranean diet, GLP-1 support, and ready to eat salads. Again, always fresh, never frozen, ready in about 2 minutes, no prep, no stress. So if that sounds good to you, head factormeals.com/Illini50off and use code Illini50off to get 50% off your first Factor box plus free breakfast for 1 year. Offers only valid for new Factor customers with code and qualifying auto-renewing subscription purchase. Head to factormeals.com/Illini50off. Use code Illini50off to get 50% off your first Factor box. All right, give me a couple players, Jay, that you're really interested to see on the field.
Malchowski. I'm interested to see it because I think the kicker is important. This is horrible, guys. I cover Illinois sports. I don't know the starting punter's name.
It could be freshman Jack Gray, another Aussie. Could be Lars Rau, who backed up Crimmins last year. The last we saw, Gray was taking the first punts that we saw.
So Josh Gray, those are my first two guys I'm curious about. I'm not trying to beat a dead horse, but like I'm concerned about that. Like, are these guys actually legit? We've had Blake Hayes in the past. We've had, you know, Crimmins. We had a guy before that.
Robertson.
Yeah, so we've had some guys. It's fine. So those are what I have question marks about, number one. Everybody has questions about him, but Caden Fagan at tight end. I think there's huge intrigue of, okay, can this guy inline block? Can he catch the ball and run? 100%. We've seen that. I wouldn't put it past him to give him the rock one or two times a game as far as running the ball. So I think that's intriguing. Michael Matalak, am I saying that right? Dan Matalak was a player that played with me. Cadillac Matalak. Long story short,
I tell you what though, they are excited about Michael Matalak, left guard.
He's a guy I want to see. I've heard good things. I've heard this is a guy that you had to fight for in the portal to get, and you had to win this battle. They won the battle. They've kept him here, and I think he's a guy that's a little bit different that's been on the O-line here that maybe could set a tone that maybe we haven't seen that Brett's been looking for. And so and that Bart Miller's been looking for. So I'm intrigued to watch him. I'm intrigued to watch Jayshon Platt. Oh, I've seen him go against Xavier Scott in that one catch and look cool. Look good.
Yeah.
I can pick a lot of plays. I think Colin Dixon is probably one of the people that you just don't worry about because he's just been so steady with everything. Of course, Kaiten Hauser. People are interested in seeing – everybody's interested in seeing the quarterback. Daniel Brown on defense. We've seen flashes when he's a guy that hasn't been healthy, highly productive at JUCO at a different position. He's playing more of a middle backer now, but that could be an edge guy as well. So he could do a little bit – so I think that's – that really interests me. I got to tell you, I know that Rusedic and Heckel are in there. I know those other three that we talked about, Juice Clark, Bailey, and Xavier Scott. But after that, I know Eberhardt switched over to
wide receiver.
Offense, right? Receiver. I don't know defensive back-wise. I've already talked about my guys, but I don't know many other defensive backs at this point.
Jaquan Morris, the JUCO corner, potentially your starter opposite Juice Clark. And then the freshman, Nick Hankins, man. Jay, I know when Vontae Davis walked in, just looked different. Looked like he was 21 years old already. Nick Hankins has that. He's 6 foot, 205, freak athlete.
Okay. So I've heard good things about Hankins, too. So, I mean, I think that's a guy that I probably look forward to watching, because you're probably going to bang the corner that, you know, is the most inexperienced, and he's got to hold up. So I think those are the things I'm necessarily looking forward to. Like every defensive-minded player or coach, you go to stopping the run in special teams. Because most defensive players get their start on special teams just as they play. And so I think those are my concerns and what I'm really looking forward to.
Jay, one last defensive thing before we wrap this up a little bit. But the 3-3-5 scheme, we know the way Hauk does it, the Rocky Laundry, really aggressive, kind of single gap, disrupt your gap, cause havoc. I mean, that's got to make tackling so important. I mean, tackling is important at every level.
Sure.
But just what do they need to be successful against the run?
So I think in general, it's a different way to read. You know, I was listening to Coach Cooper, who is the linebacker coach, and he did a great job explaining it. You know, so many defenses in 7 and 8 man fronts are, hey, I have one back. If there's one back, there's one gap. If there's two backs, I could possibly have an A gap on this side or a B gap on this side. It might be two gaps. 7 man front, I'm gonna have to probably do two gaps. 8 man front, I'm gonna have one gap. And so there's all these different things. And it's different in a 3-3-5 in that you're playing defense like a running back is trying to find a hole. So a running back, when he reads, if he sees a bunch of blockers and what they would call a cloudy look or a closed window look, he's not going to run in that hole. He's going to go to where daylight is, right? And they're trying to teach you to not be like robotic. Okay, my name's Jay. I got the A gap on this play. If anybody runs in the A gap, he's mine. Well, chances are that he won't run the A gap, but you don't want to be a robot and give yourself up in the A gap if the ball's not going to the A gap. Okay, you've got to be a football player. And so what they're trying to teach is, hey, as a defender, if you see a cloudy picture and that hole's filled up, chances are the running back's not coming there. He's probably going to where the hole is. So if your hole's filled up, I got to see the cloudy picture and go find the clear picture to read where that running back may be coming in, right? They'll call it cloudy, clear, open, closed window, open window. And so you are reading as you do that. And then once you see a clear picture, you take a shot and try to make a tackle in space on a guy or in that window that may. So, yeah, the reading's different. And then at the point of attack, every defense tackling is important. But I think it's really important, too, to know where your help is. If I'm going to miss a tackle, I better miss it where there's help.
Yeah.
If I miss a tackle and I'm the last guy defense, let's say, to the sideline, and I didn't turn the ball back in, well, then that's where the big play comes in. And I think a lot of it is, hey, if I'm going to miss, I'm going to miss to where the guy has to go to my help and knowing where my help is. So that's a little bit more sophisticated approach than the caveman approach of one gap, and let's just go blow up this gap. We want you to be a football player. We don't want you to be a drone. It takes a little teaching, and it's a newer way to think, but it's oftentimes what the offense does. Like, for instance, on an RPO, well, if this linebacker comes up, then I'm going to throw behind him. If he stays behind, then I'm going to hand it off. If I'm a running back and this defensive end shows up the field, well, I can't get to the edge, I'm going to go up. If he's really soft and I can get the edge, then I'm going to go. So these are things that have to happen in split decisions, and they're trying to make it so that you can read these things and play fast at the same time. My fear is what's good about one gap is I can play fast. This is my job, I got it. But I can take myself out of the play. My fear is that they play a little bit slow when it gets into real action of, is this clear, is this cloudy? And by the time they know it, they're gone. Yeah. So you gotta really get it to know how to play and rep it out to play fast and be the best you can be.
All right, Jay, as we wrap this up, what are your expectations this year? I mean, the whole goal is sustained success. What does that look like for you for Illinois this season?
Yeah, I would probably be, you know, right where everybody else is. I think if you got 7 wins or more, you're sustaining success. I know that 7 wins, you may think, oh my gosh, you know, we went down from 10 to 9 to now 7. But 7 wins would having you win at least 4 Big Ten games. I mean, that's middle of the road and whatnot. Do I think they can be better? Do I think their goals are higher? Yes. But I think that's what I kind of see them in, that 7 to 8 win range. If their special teams can be better, that could swing up a game. If they're worse, it could certainly swing down a game. But I will say they're in a very tough conference, and they are in 9 conference games with a quality defending Power 5 champion that they're going to play in their non-con. So no game is easy in the Big Ten. I don't care who it is. They're going to be a difficult game, and you're in a really, really tough conference. So that's what I would say. That's kind of my expectation.
Jay Lehman, Jerry Goods, some good stuff about why there's some confidence in certain areas and why there's some questions in certain areas, and that's what makes playing the game so much fun. We don't know a lot about this team with half the roster changing, half the coaching staff, but it's going to be an interesting year, that's for sure.
Oh, very interesting, you know, and I'm excited to see Illinois really take on a new defensive scheme, try something different to get an edge, and still compete and be a top 25 football team despite all the challenges. It's a hats off to Brett and Josh and also the whole coaching staff. We are living in an era of college football that is very difficult to deal with change and roster turnover, and yet it's been one of the most fruitful periods for Illinois football ever. And so I'm excited about it. You know, as a football fan and as an alum, we're just excited about what they're doing. And because we don't get to see them much in action, we're looking forward to them playing UAB here in about 2 weeks.
Well, Jay Lehman, we'll meet every Monday right here on the podcast. We appreciate it. Look forward to it, man.
All right. Take care, guys.
All right, great stuff as always from Jay Lehman. He is the goods. As I just said, he will join us every Monday. Probably have that up in the afternoon most Mondays on the podcast here and on the YouTube channel. What a great breakdown from Jay Lehman. Great to get his thoughts as always. And he's always a must appointment viewing, listening every Monday here on the podcast. So pumped to have him for another year here on the podcast. We're pumped that you guys listen to the Illini Inquirer podcast. Give us a follow, rating, review wherever you get your podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, hit that like button down below. Subscribe to us and hit that notifications bell. And don't forget, we got great VIP membership deal going on right now. 60% off for your first full year, which is more than $80 of savings. Get our updated training camp notes every day. We continue to go through everything we've learned. We got some great feature stories coming up. And of course, Kyle Toss covering Illini basketball at IlliniInquirer.com as well. If you want something shorter term, just try us out for a month. It's just $1 for your first month. And after your promotional period, whether that's a year or a month, you get complimentary Paramount Plus access, which I know my kids like to take advantage of. They're going through a SpongeBob phase. So we use Paramount Plus all the time right now. But we appreciate you guys listening to the Illini Inquirer podcast. Have a great day. Take care of each other. And we'll talk to you next time right here on the Illini Inquirer podcast.
Bye, everybody.